Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana, what I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Welcome in a Wednesday edition of the program. Glad to have you with us here on the Hoosier Report. We do this show each weekday live at 11 a.m. And, of course, if you can't catch up with us, 1450 a.m., 96.1 FM, streaming online at BigXSportsRadio.com. You can always find us as a podcast. We have it online each afternoon as well. Apple Podcast, a real great, simple way to find us. Just search for the Hoosier Report. You should all have the Apple Podcast app on your iPhone or your iPad, even your computer, and you can listen basically on demand to our show each and every day. Glad to have you with us. And let's jump right into an hour long of IU basketball, football, and Southern Indiana sports discussion here on the Hoosier Report. And we start today with the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we always open with our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Today in the headlines, Fred Glass, his retirement is now official. Scott Dolson, the AD in waiting, officially takes over today. And on his final day, Fred Glass with an email to all the athletes and the coaches about some of the COVID-19 protocols and some reminders, and we'll tell you about that. Also, in the Big Ten Conference, as much as we're watching recruiting and who's coming back and any other changes for next season, one of the things you got to watch in the conference and really across college sports is financial implications for some of these schools. And Michigan had some announcements yesterday, Iowa as well, so we'll touch on that. There also is a new IU name, very new, very early in the process, but we want to give you a new name in the 2022 class to pay attention to. And this guy is from North Dakota. I can't ever remember following a recruit from North Dakota, but perhaps we will be doing that here as Indiana gets involved with a young player. Also, Victor Oladipo, he was on a media teleconference this morning. We'll tell you about if he's going to be in Orlando later this month. We are now officially in July. We'll tell you if he's going to be in Orlando later this month to suit up with the Pacers for the remainder of the NBA season, and a few other headlines coming up here in segment number one. Later in the show, really excited today. Love basketball. If you know me, if you listen to this show, you know we're probably 85% basketball year-round. And that's just the way I want it. That's the way I think a lot of you guys are as well. And we talk football. We love our high school and, of course, IU football, but heavy basketball. And I am so excited that we've got some basketball coming back July 4th with the TBT, the basketball tournament. I've talked about it. Indiana doesn't have an alumni team, unfortunately. This would have been a tremendous year for some of the IU players to band together. They would have had a huge following from IU fans right now with no sports going on. This is going to be the first live basketball in our country, at least basketball that's going to be televised and that's not of the professional level, but really quality players and really quality teams. And so it gets started July 4th, and today with us from Columbus, Ohio, from the bubble that they are forming in downtown Columbus at the Nationwide Center and a couple hotels where the players are going to be housed at, the founder and CEO of the TBT, which is for $1 million this year. It's been for $2 million in previous years. John Mugar is going to be with us. And John joined us, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago when this thing was starting to pick up traction, starting to get some ESPN coverage, but it wasn't like it has been last year and even this year. And, of course, it's going to be different with the pandemic. The money's not as much. There are 24 teams as opposed to 64. There were no regional games before they got to the final location. But this is basically, I think, a way to see good basketball a lot of recognizable names. There are a number of teams of overseas professionals and guys that played college ball that you will know their name from the Big Ten Conference. And some of the Big Ten schools, Purdue, Illinois, and Ohio State, they have alumni teams that are in this tournament coming up. And so the interesting thing is if one player tests positive, now you had to get tested when you arrived, but if one player tests positive from your team during this tournament, which lasts about two and a half weeks, the team is disqualified. And so you got to hope when you get there, everybody's been tested, people are negative, and as you enter the bubble, you can't find a way to be infected if everybody truly stays within the bubble in Columbus, Ohio. So it's interesting. It's basketball. It's going to be live. It's on the ESPN family of networks. It's a really cool concept. Anybody can enter a team in a normal year, especially. You get to vote. That's how teams get the opportunity to qualify for this. But I think of all things, of course, basketball on TV is wonderful. This is going to be a great test for what the NBA could be like. How many teams will be disqualified? Will any, once they get in the bubble for the coronavirus? And obviously the NBA is not saying if one player tests positive, you're disqualified. But it'll be interesting to see how they handle those things and if teams are disqualified from the TBT because of the coronavirus, if anyone comes down with it. So we're going to talk with the founder about the challenges, how this all came about in the first place. And, of course, especially this year, it's a lot different with this pandemic that we are in. So John Mugar, the founder, CEO of the TBT, very interesting guy. He's coming up in the first segment when we have a guest later in the show. And then following him in the final segment today, we'll be joined by Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune, as we talk local sports. Return to high school sports, football specifically, is kind of at the forefront right now as they get ready to begin some all-important social distance workouts in most cases across our state here in Indiana on Monday after the July 4th holiday. You can get to it and start working out for the football season. There are a lot of rules and regulations in place. Each school system in southern Indiana might be just a little bit different on what they're requiring. But across the board, you know, temperatures have to be taken of the athletes as they arrive. There has to be documentation filled out. Coaches oftentimes, if they can't social distance as they coach, have to wear a face mask, whether you're in a gym or even outside at times. That will be interesting to see. But again, this is big for football and for fall sports because if they get these summer workouts and conditioning in, it gets them a step closer to the season. And also, as school starts back at some places later in July and into August, I think we'll find out what it looks like and more possible how, or I should say more and more how possible playing fall sports here in the state is. Is a contact sport like football possible to play during this pandemic, especially when you don't have them all in a bubble, like maybe a professional organization or even a college organization can somewhat do? Not going to happen at high schools, and so we'll see how it goes. But we'll talk about that and more with Josh Cook. That segment with Josh is presented by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 shirt, so we'll get to that later in the show today. That's the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Make sure to visit Honey Baked Ham and check out all the new dinner package deals that are now being offered. Don't forget you can dine in, pick up as well, and also curbside service still available at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's jump into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. And on his final day, Fred Glass sends an important email out to the students and the coaches within the IU athletic department, and IU made this public for the media as well. Basically, it was an email that reassured to the athletes that activities this summer are voluntary and that participating in athletics due to COVID-19 concerns, moreover, will also not result in any loss of a scholarship. So, again, if an athlete has legitimate concerns, possibly has underlying conditions, which is possible even at that age group, you know, they do not have to participate. Again, we're pending. We think that the seasons are going to happen fairly normal where there's travel and games, and we don't know about fans in the different sports. But a big announcement from Fred Glass, and again, he's always been on the side of the student athlete. You can have, no matter what you think about his basketball hires or other decisions, that is one. He's always stood on the side of the student athletes. And so basically a reassuring email to them yesterday, that's essentially his final task as he exits the IU athletic department, enters retirement. And Scott Dolson, a longtime staffer and associate AD in the department, takes over officially on his own starting today. A couple financial notes, which are becoming more and more common when you think about college football and college sports from the Big Ten Conference, at least. You know, yesterday we talked about IU's projected deficit. It was right around $12 million, I think. Michigan yesterday saying their projection, $26.1 million for the upcoming fiscal year. And again, fiscal years in most government-type organizations and schools begins July 1st. And again, why is Michigan a lot more? Well, you have to think about college football. You have to think about their fans. Again, without breaking down their situation like we did Indiana's, very likely that fans they know either will not be there or will be half or a percentage of the normal expectation, and that is going to be for football power schools that have a huge crowd and a huge following. Obviously a big, big loss, and Michigan, you would expect, would find that to be the case for them. Also at Michigan yesterday, they say that some of their senior employees, which Jim Harbaugh, the football coach, and Juwan Howard, the men's basketball coach, they are among some of these senior employees that are going to take a 10% pay cut, very similar to what Archie Miller and some of the top IU guys did. It sounds like at IU they got paid or will get paid and are donating it back. There could be, I guess, some tax benefits perhaps in that. But pay cuts, donations back, whatever you want to phrase it, term it, call it, I think that's going to be something that's pretty standard across college sports in this pandemic, as athletic departments struggling with what they're going to do, how they're going to fund things, especially if football doesn't happen or football happens with a very much reduced crowd or no crowd allowed into some of the arenas and some of the stadiums. Also from the Big Ten, Iowa, for its fiscal year 2021 budget, which begins today, they've got to cut it by $15 million. So that's much more along the lines of an IU-type deficit there. Fran McCaffrey, among some of the other top employees there that have agreed to a 15% base salary reduction or contribution to the department. In fact, their deputy AD, she agreed to 25% salary cut. And the AD himself, that's Gary Barta at Iowa, he cuts his total compensation by 30%. So you talk about stepping up, putting your money where your mouth is, the AD at Iowa really doing that. One other new name, not going to spend a lot of time on this guy. He's a 2022 prospect, a big guy, 6'10", and from the state of North Dakota. I can't ever recall talking about a basketball player from North Dakota, but Indiana has reached out, as have a number of high major schools, also a number of Big Ten Conference schools as well, including Indiana, Purdue, Butler, just from the state of Indiana, that have reached out to him. His name is Joe Hurlbert. Hurlbert is his name, and again, he is expected to be a fast riser as far as his recruiting goes. Indiana has made contact. We're in that period where college coaches can reach out to young prospects. And so that's another name. Don't think we'll have any problems forgetting him or not remembering where he's from in North Dakota. Joe Hurlbert, another prospect to add to the list for Indiana in the class of 2022. Earlier this morning, Victor Oladipo was on a Pacers teleconference with the media. He says that he remains undecided about returning to the Pacers lineup for the conclusion of the NBA season in Orlando. He's concerned about a re-injury during a quick, basically, this is a quick return, a quick ramp up to playoff-type basketball. We all know that watch the NBA, don't watch the NBA, no question about it that there is absolutely no question about it that when you go back to playoff basketball, when you get to that part of the season, these guys step it up. That's why I think a lot of us that maybe don't watch the regular season pay a lot more of attention when it comes to the postseason. So a big difference, and that's a good point by Oladipo. Oladipo said, quote, "This returning to Orlando is an experiment when you think about it. This is something new. This is something never done before. At the end of the day, we've all been gone for a very long time." So it sounds like for the Pacers and for Victor Oladipo,
he is still very much up in the air on what exactly could happen with his status for Orlando. Also, a couple other quick headlines to get to. Bellarmine, today they officially join NCAA Division I. Men's basketball, many of their sports, a couple were already Division I, like men's lacrosse, but they join the NCAA Division I ranks today, which has been unbelievable to watch the rise, not only of men's basketball, but other programs on the Bellarmine campus. And, of course, from a basketball perspective, specifically with Coach Davenport on the men's side, they've had a lot of success as they built that thing up to get to a Division I level program with guys from Southern Indiana, whether they be right here in our immediate area or whether they be some guys from down in Evansville or other places. Lots of success with Southern Indiana players, no question about that. So pretty cool to see them join the Division I ranks. I got to tell you, I'll miss those Bellarmine USI, Bellarmine Indianapolis games that were such wonderful rivalries over the years. I'll miss the Division II tournament when Bellarmine would qualify to host some of the opening games that was packed over there at Knights Hall. Got to see some great New Albany guys, some great Jeffersonville guys, Justin Benedetti from Providence. Fun memories watching Bellarmine in D2 compete at a high level. And let's hope that Coach Davenport can keep the momentum up when it comes to Southern Indiana players and to recruiting, and that Bellarmine can find success at the mid-major level, basically in the Division I conference or Division I level as well. That's a look at our headlines for this Wednesday edition of the program. Stay with us. In the next segment, we'll have John Mugar. He's the CEO and the founder of the basketball tournament for $1 million. A chat with him, including how crazy this tournament's going to be in a bubble in Columbus, Ohio, after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennis.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach, who got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back. We are all so ready for live basketball. It has been a while with the pandemic going on, canceling everything from March Madness to the NBA. And yes, the NBA is going to restart later in the summer, but first up is going to be the TBT, the basketball tournament. It's billed as the highest stakes basketball tournament in the world. This year, it's a $1 million prize. Winner takes all for the championship. And joining me today to talk about this tournament and the return of live basketball here in the country is John Mugar. He's the owner and CEO of the TBT. John, thanks for being with us. How does it feel to have organized this year the first live basketball that's really going to be played on national television in the country during this pandemic and since everything was shut down at the beginning of this pandemic?
It might feel good once we are through it all on July 14, but right now we're so in the weeds. But thank you guys for having me on. And I heard the Hoosiers clip playing into this, and that was obviously a huge inspiration for this whole tournament.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the inspiration. We've had you on before. This tournament gathers a lot of top-notch players, and I've heard you say this before on other interviews. You were amazed at how many really good basketball players are out there in our country, really in our world, outside of those in the NBA currently. And the TBT, I think, showcases that. How did this thing get started? And then once it got started, how in the world did it get so big and wind up on the ESPN family of networks? Last year, in a normal setting, it was a $2 million prize for the winner. This year, $1 million. How did this all come about?
It started as a text message amongst friends. So me and my friends in seventh grade, Dan Friel, on a Sunday morning when we're both off from work, he was in Louisiana, I was in California. We texted each other and we said, what do you think would happen if you put $50 million on the table and invited anybody to come play for it? Would NBA teams enter? Would college basketball teams enter? Would LeBron play? and then who would win? You know, could this kind of deconstruct the sports landscape with that kind of money? And then who would assemble teams and win? And then what style of basketball would win? So we it started with that idea. It took about 2 years to go from that point to actually putting it on in 2014 as a $500,000 winner-take-all tournament in Philadelphia. And as you alluded to, right at the outset, we knew that the caliber of player would be pretty phenomenal because we had our first game of the day in front of maybe 17 people at 8:30 in the morning, and Marshall Henderson and Hakeem Warrick walk into the gym to play, and they're just coming off. Henderson is just coming off his career at Ole Miss. Hakeem Warrick had many years in the NBA, and I had personally never seen players that good in person before. So that was a very eye-opening moment, and ESPN caught wind of it, I think about an hour and a half later, and called us up out of the blue and asked if they could stream the championship game that year on ESPN3, and then the rest has been history with them.
Are you surprised at, and maybe you're not surprised at all, but are you surprised at the level of competition, the level of players, some of the great teams that have been assembled for your tournament that you've been able to put together? I think people, and I'm guilty of this as well, outside of the NBA, we forget how many great basketball players there are in our country and in our world.
It's an NBA caliber player, and I'm extremely surprised. We've had 35 players go on from CBT to play in the to sign deals with NBA teams. We've had a player go on to start for the Phoenix Suns and score 27 points in a game, and then 3 weeks later, he's not in the NBA anymore. We had a player last year, Jeremy Pargo, who signed a 10-day deal with the Golden State Warriors, and he I think he scored 15 points in one of his games, and then 10 days later, he wasn't there anymore. So there's not only a fine line between the TBT caliber player and people who are on the end of the bench, but there's a fine line between the TBT player and starters in the NBA. All of these players, there are only about 400 spots in the NBA, and there are probably at least 1,000 players who play NBA caliber basketball, and we happen to attract a lot of them.
John Mugar, he's the founder and CEO of the basketball tournament. It all begins, it tips off very soon, July 4th from Columbus, Ohio. And one of the things I want to point out before we get into this year's tournament is the fact that anybody can enter a team. And I've known a couple people, two people in Kentucky, the state of Kentucky, that have actually fielded teams, and one got there, one didn't. But this is something that anybody can sign up and anybody can put a team together, and there's a lot of fan interaction as well. Tell us more about why this is truly an open tournament. You hear Edwards, this is an open tournament for adults. You hear that a lot in different sports, but this is truly a national-type tournament that's open to anybody. You've got to sign up. You've got to figure out how to qualify and get in. And, of course, this year the field not as big because of the COVID restrictions and things like that, and we'll talk about that down the line. But anybody can enter this thing, John.
That's right. We had over 120 teams apply this year for 24 spots, and we're typically a 64-team tournament. But the inspiration for this came from Hoosiers, honestly. And I could recite that movie backwards and forwards growing up. And the open tournament format always really appealed to me, and this idea of an underdog coming from nowhere. It's like the Rocky story, the Karate Kid story, Hoosiers. Those are really inspirations for me growing up, and I wanted to see that play out on the professional sports level where you truly open things up to everybody, and you give a group of guys who play at the YMCA the same chance you give a group of players who are in or out of the NBA, just coming out of the NBA, and you see who wins. And in TBT, the first thing you learn when you play is you tear your resume up. It does not matter if you had a 17-year NBA career. It doesn't matter if you're going into the NBA. If you show up and you think you're owed something when you step on the court, you're going to get beat. And we see that time and time again. So it is truly the underdog model.
I know this year has been a lot different for sports, for business, for life. With COVID-19 and the pandemic that our country is currently battling against. I'm curious how difficult this has been. I can only imagine, as we are days away from tipping off the TBT for this year, that you guys are maybe even dealing with problems surrounding some of this, but how difficult has it been? I know there have been some late drops. I think a couple players have dropped in recent weeks because of different concerns or maybe even positive cases. You can confirm or deny that, but I know this has been a lot of extra challenges for you, but you have seen it through, determined to get live basketball back. You're in Columbus, Ohio. All the teams are going to be sequestered, and you guys have a plan to make this thing work. Tell us about the challenges, and have there been some people a little shaky about coming? And then what's it going to look like this year? How's it going to be different because of the pandemic?
From day one has been extraordinary. Players want to play, and they want to play in a very safe format. So we knew from the get-go in March, once things really started to show, you know, that the virus would impact this country, and things started being suspended or shut down, that we would have to take this extremely, extremely seriously, and come up with our own health and safety plan to put on an event where players would feel safe playing a contact sport. So it was really challenging from that point on. We have the best team in the world. I mean, there's eight of us who have been working together for 7 years now, and we don't even have to communicate. I mean, we work so seamlessly together, and we're so used being a small business. We're just so used to dealing with obstacles constantly. This is a totally different type of obstacle to deal with, obviously, because you're dealing with health and safety. But we found some tremendous medical advisors to help guide us through it. We put our heads down and created a plan over the course of 3 months, and now we're actually executing it, and we're somehow in this position where we can be the first televised basketball games in America since March 12th.
Wow, that's awesome stuff. Talking with John Mugar, founder and CEO of the TBT, the basketball tournament for $1 million winner-take-all prize. One other thing I wanted to bring up is these alumni teams, college alumni teams. I probably, John, this year, as a radio show that covers IU and the Hoosiers on a daily basis, I've probably had more feedback as we've teased and mentioned your tournament coming up and the return of live basketball starting in July with the TBT followed by the NBA. I've probably had more feedback about, man, I wish there were some IU guys or an IU alumni team in the tournament. I know there's a couple players on one of the teams that do have an Indiana University connection, but you've had some success, and it seems fans really rally around some of the alumni teams. And this year, Purdue from our state, they have an alumni team. They've had some late changes to the roster, I believe, over the last few weeks. I think Illinois, another Big Ten school with an alumni team this year. But just talk about the college alumni teams that have built a team based on certain colleges and the success that they've had and how it maybe provides an additional platform to fans to kind of reunite around those guys.
Yeah, it's been really eye-opening for schools that create an alumni team and embrace it. I mean, last year, Wichita State put in an alumni team for the first time, and they hosted games down in their arena, and they got 7,500 people there in the middle of the summer to go to their round one game. And these people were probably in short sleeves next to each other for the first time in their lives, watching in a hot day. And they loved it. The players loved it. The school loved it. They were all completely blown away. I mean, it's a great opportunity for the school, for the players, for the fan base to reunite everybody in the summer. And it's an additional touch point for them. So we would love an Indiana alumni team. We had Sheehy, Wills, Hulls, and Watford play at one point in the tournament. We have had some other players come through. We talked to Johnny Jager this year for a while. He almost put it together. My dream would be to do what they did in Wichita State last year and put in a regional event in Assembly Hall in the middle of next summer and have an IU alumni team host it. And I think that fans would really show out for it. So we hope that happens.
Yeah, great stuff. John Mugar, my guest. John, before we let you go, I just want to mention this. I know you talk some about what it's been like to organize this thing in a pandemic with health concerns. This thing is going to take place in Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio. The games are going to be broadcast on the ESPN family of networks. I believe that includes ESPN Plus all the way up to the big dog, the ESPN main station. And then I even saw the other day at the hotel or hotels you're placing players at, you've brought in basketball courts from other arenas or other facilities and put them down in the conference room areas or the big spaces in hotels to allow teams to warm up and practice and those sorts of things. You guys have pulled out a lot of stops for this one that you've not had to do before, and just really cool to see that.
Yeah, I mean, as a basketball lifer, I grew up loving the game. I played Division III basketball myself, and I couldn't sleep at 11 p.m. last night, so I rolled out of bed and went down, grabbed a ball, and shot around alone on the Ohio State court in the middle of this hotel. And I think that is, like, worth the price of this whole seven-year effort we've gone through to put on TBT alone. So it's amazing. We have four practice courts in the hotel, so we have a perimeter around the hotel. We're kind of pulling off this quarantine as we thought it would come together. So hopefully we have a little luck here in the next week and a half and we can put on some games.
Absolutely. We'll all be pulling for you. And again, just glad to see live basketball. I guarantee you're going to have some people watching from Southern Indiana and from the Louisville, Kentucky market. Before you go, any favorites? I know you're not supposed to pick sides in this thing as the organizer, but you've gotten to know some of these teams and some of these players. Is there a couple teams you would suggest that maybe would be entertaining to watch or that we look out for in this year's TBT?
It's really hard not to go with the defending champion, the Ohio State alumni team. This will be Aaron Kraft's last run as a player. He's going to retire after this and go into medical school. We have our four-time champion overseas elite coming in. They added Joe Johnson to their roster, so I think they're 33-1 all time in TBT. And then, of course, I'm an underdog person, so great waiting in the wings. We have three additional teams in quarantine in case somebody tests out over the next week, and one of those teams is D2. And as an underdog fan, I would have to say that team, a Division II all-star team, would be pretty awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely. John Mugar, founder, CEO of The Basketball Tournament, winner take all this year, just 24 teams and $1 million prize for the winners. John, appreciate, as a basketball guy, appreciate your idea, appreciate your work, and it has just been fantastic. We had you on a few years ago, two, 3 years ago maybe, and even since then, it's fantastic to see how far this thing has come, and I know it'll be great this year, and once we get through this pandemic, there's no telling where you might take this thing. Thanks for taking time out to chat with us today.
Thanks for the support, and help me get to Assembly Hall next summer. If the fans demand it, I think we'll get there.
Absolutely. We'll be in touch. John Mugar, he's the founder, CEO of The Basketball Tournament. Excited for live basketball to return in our country, and it all begins July 4th on the ESPN family of networks. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with more. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment on this Wednesday program. A couple things before we get to Josh Cook of the News and Tribune. Don't forget that Wednesdays, that's the only day of the week on a normal basis that Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb is addressing the COVID-19 pandemic in the Hoosier State. And I remind you that today we'll carry live his press conference from Indianapolis at 2:30 today. But also, you know how rumors get started, and I'm hearing he'll have some interesting announcements today about Indiana's reopening plan. So you might want to tune in if you're out and about and want to catch it live. We will have that for you on the Big X at 2:30 today. Our segment with Josh, he's the sports editor of the News and Tribune. It's brought to you by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 t-shirt. They offer custom apparel to meet all of your apparel needs, including t-shirts, uniforms, corporate wear, and promotional items. Don't forget screen printing, embroidery, fully sublimated uniforms, whatever your needs may be. Let Major League Shirt Company outfit your team or organization today. Visit mlshirtco.com. Again, mlshirtco.com. Josh Cook is with me. And, Josh, great to reconnect after a week or so of not having you with us. Local sports, we hope, pick up next week, because after we get through the July 4 holiday in this coming weekend, high school teams across the state, as we stand right now, are able to open some workouts and light practices, and most school systems requiring that with those workouts they social distance at least between now and the start of school before perhaps they could enter another phase. But I'll tell you what, we are just glad to know that as it stands now, teams and athletes across the area are set to return to football fields and gyms and other athletic facilities at high schools here in the area starting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week for some summer workouts.
Heck yeah. Are you ready for some football, Matt? I sure am.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I was just I was in the hot zone last week in Florida, so I'm back now. And actually, funny enough, I was just typing in some high school football schedules for this upcoming season. So, you know, hopefully, everything goes well these next few weeks. I was talking to Silver Creek's athletic director, John Dabo, last night. He said we're just taking it 2 weeks at a time. So, trying to get through these first 2 weeks of phase one, and then move on to the next 2 weeks of phase two in the reopening plan, and hopefully everything gets going and everything gets back to normal.
Absolutely. Josh, we have kind of, it seems like every day on social media, sports, ESPN, whatever it may be, it's almost been like a tracking process to see, okay, two football players from this school tested positive. There are 30 football players here that are either positive or quarantined because of COVID-19. This school has announced going to pause the return to athletics and these voluntary workouts. Every day there's been something along those lines, at least as athletes over the past 3 weeks return to campuses. I'm not sure that high schools are going to tell and report to the media. I know there are some reporting mechanisms that have to be done with state government, state health departments, even local health departments. But you wonder, as athletes return next week, these young, healthy athletes that are even younger than a college-age student, if they're not out there working out, playing a little hoops, out in the yard doing what they do, and maybe have the virus and don't know it because, thankfully, they're very healthy. You wonder if any cases like that will be caught that will really maybe cause concern for some coaches and athletic directors as these students try to get back to some normalcy in a team environment while social distancing.
Yeah, it definitely makes you wonder about that. I found it amazing when Indiana didn't have any athletes test positive. What was it, last week?
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that'll still be the case for the area high schools. I don't know if that's, knock on wood, you think with all these athletes coming back, maybe there's, going to be one or two to test positive. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, who knows? You could have it and not even know it at this point for some kids.
I've talked to a number of the area basketball coaches. Ryan Miller joined the program last week from a basketball perspective. Steve Cooley, the football coach at New Albany, joined us last week as well. And it sounds like, by all accounts, people I've had on the show, people I've talked to off air, just kind of polling people to see what it's going to look like, they're excited to get back together. The kids are excited to come back into their schools. They're glad to have some interaction with them, but they're not going to be able to play football and get on the line and run plays with a live defense. They're not going to be able to play open gym, pick up basketball, even just going against each other, have a 3-on-3 tournament among your team. Right now, it seems most regulations at school corporations across the area are, hey, you can get back together, you can work out, you can do individual type drills, but you got to keep your distance. So I'm not sure that there's going to be any real game-like stuff going on for the next 3 weeks. But the individual stuff, getting back in shape as well, learning some of the specific things about your position in football or in basketball or really in any sport, obviously that's a start to, especially with time off and maybe being out of shape, that's a start to returning. And then, Josh, you've got other sports like tennis and others where you think pretty much you should be able to be somewhat business as normal without having a lot of direct contact. So I think for a lot of the big sports, the football, the basketball, it's going to be all individual stuff. And some sports might be able to move ahead somewhat as normal.
Yeah, like you said, I definitely agree. Sports like tennis, girls' golf starts. Actually, it's supposed to start at the end of July, and they can have matches as early as the beginning of August. So girls golf, tennis, cross country, you know, those sports should be relatively, you know, just back to basics, you know, back to business pretty soon. But yeah, like you mentioned, the other ones, basketball and football. I know for the phase one, you know, no use of the locker rooms, and there's only, you know, limited access in the weight room. Only so many people can be in there at a time, that kind of thing. So, you know, they gotta follow all the guidelines that are set, and, you know, hopefully get through the first 2 weeks and then on to phase two. And then, which goes from July 20th to August 15th. And then after that, you know, heck, we could start having, you know, games. I think that starts soccer games and you know, other volleyball games that can start that week. So that would be great.
Josh Cook of the News and Tribune, he's the sports editor. This segment each Wednesday brought to you by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 T-shirt. If you're looking to raise money for your team or event, let Major League's online fan stores work for you. You can outfit your fans and raise money with very little effort. Major League even does all the sorting. You just have to cash the check. Find out more at Major League Shirt Company's website. That's MLShirtCo.com. Josh, everywhere I go, and I know you get this as well as a local media member that covers high school sports, are we going to have a football season? Are we going to have a fall sports season? And obviously we're talking about workouts that begin next week, and so I think the safe answer to that is that schools and the IHSAA and I think associations across America are planning for safe returns to sports. Now, we know that if it returns, if games are played, could be later, could be without fans, could be a limited number of fans. Things could definitely and will definitely look different. But I think that's why this month of July, getting high school athletes back for voluntary workouts and seeing how things go, not just with the high school side in the state, these sports and these workouts this month, but how the numbers overall, hospitalizations, number of cases overall in the state, and I think even in specific counties will be a big factor as to do we have a contact sport like football that kicks off in August as it's supposed to with its first regular season game and that goes all the way through November and with a state tournament and a state championship in Indianapolis. I think a lot of things about what happens this month with high school sports will matter with that. And then, of course, every day you check the numbers and the hospitalizations and things like that. That's what officials, governors, state health people, local health people, and, of course, school administrators will base their decisions off of.
Yeah, I mean, of all the fall high school sports, you know, I can pretty much all of them I can see. Football is the one that still is kind of, you know, I'm not quite sure how it's going to happen with all the regulations and everything. But, you know, hopefully by August 15th, everything is okay. And you know, we can move forward with football, but it really, you know, being in the close quarters, being, you know, the sweating, you know, all that stuff, it's going to be, I don't know. I mean, flag football, maybe, I don't know. 7-on-7, we'll see. I don't know.
Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune. Josh, while we're on the subject of football, we've had a couple coaches on lately. We've had a player on in Winker's Wright of Floyd Central after he committed to Illinois State last week. And it's that time of year to start previewing, to start building up the season and thinking about what the storylines can be. There's a lot of unknown with coaches, with returning players, with some of the schools as far as how competitive they could be in their conference and in their sectional. But I think one thing that we both agree on, and I think anyone that knows anything at all about high school sports in the area agrees on, that's Floyd Central football very likely will be at the top of the heap locally as far as opportunities for a great record, opportunities for conference and postseason success, and just a team maybe that could kind of shine as we get into the tournament.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They should be probably the best team in the area. I'm just looking at their schedule. They first 3 weeks they play Louisville Male in the first game, which is always, you know, one of the best teams in Kentucky, one of the best teams in, you know, Class 6A over there. And they play Providence in week two. Then in week three they turn around and make a trip to Cincinnati Elder, which is always one of the big powerhouses in Cincinnati and Ohio. So it's gonna be an interesting start to see how they do against mail in and Elder, you know, those big time teams.
Absolutely. Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune. This segment brought to you by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 t-shirt. Josh, let's keep our fingers crossed that all goes well next week and beyond for these high school athletes. And we hope that when the fall gets here, when August, really it's late, mid to late August, you've got a lot of the fall sports getting underway. And, of course, football with that scrimmage in the middle of the month, and then football games officially begin after that. Let's hope that it all goes well with that, and we can get back to at least having some high school sports as we get ready to see some pro sports return later this summer. Be nice to get some local activity going on as well.
That'd be wonderful, Matt. Yeah, first day of school, you know, is later this month. Today's July 1st, so most of them start July 29th, somewhere around there. So, yeah, looking forward to it, and can't wait. And, by the way, happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
Thank you, Josh. Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune. Josh, have a great one.
Thank you too, Matt.
That's going to wrap things up for this Wednesday program. Don't forget, we do this show each weekday live at 11 o'clock. Complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. We'll talk IU basketball tomorrow with Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. Also, we'll have some other guests joining us on our Thursday program as well. And just a reminder, if you ever can't be with us live, check out the podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts. Just search for the Hoosier Report. And if you would, if you enjoy the show, you like IU, you like Southern Indiana sports, leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. It'll help us connect with others that are interested in our radio show and podcast. That wraps it up for today. Have a great Wednesday. Until tomorrow, this is Matt Dennison here on the Hoosier Report.